DW Deutsche Welle, World in Progress.
Hello and welcome to World in Progress. I'm Anke Rasper in Bonn, Germany. Our topics today: Spanish enclaves in North Africa attract thousands of African migrants. In Miami, Florida, musicians battle the dangers of gun violence.
I had one incident with my cousin. Her ex-boyfriend shot her and she died on scene. And we could prevent problems like this. We could make sure that students stay away from gun violence and stuff.
A drug clinic in Dakar, Senegal, tries to help people fight their addiction.
It's your everyday man and woman. There is no partition, there is no sectorization. Here, we see all types of profiles. People come from everywhere.
Plus, a haven for classic Beatles and other Volkswagen cars in a backyard in Pakistan. And we start out in North Africa today. The Spanish cities of Ceuta and Melilla are situated on the North African coast, bordering on Morocco. As the only land border between Africa and Europe, they draw thousands of sub-Saharan migrants each year who attempt to reach the cities either by getting over the border fences or round them by sea. Morocco tightly controls that frontier, but sometimes migrants manage to get through, and politics can play a part when they do. Guy Hedgeco reports from the border.
I'm in the town of Beni Ansar in the far north of Morocco. It's an extremely busy, bustling town because it borders the Spanish city of Melilla, which I can see just a couple of hundred metres away behind the border fence. So here, I'm in Africa, and over there, I'd be in Europe. Thousands of Moroccans and Spaniards cross back and forth over the border each day, mainly to buy and sell goods. But for others, getting from Morocco to Spain is much tougher. This camp in a Moroccan forest overlooking Melilla was inhabited by young men from the Ivory Coast and was a desperate sight when I visited in 2014. Many of them had been living there for months, repeatedly trying to scale the 6-metre-high fence that separated them from Spanish territory. But more recently, Moroccan police have destroyed camps like this, scattering migrants elsewhere. Those who do reach the other side celebrate the beginning of what they believe will be a new life. This group of sub-Saharan Africans reached Ceuta in February.
We have crossed the desert. We have been through lots of difficult situations. We say thank you to God for getting us through these dangers, and we are now in Ceuta, which is a Spanish city.
Nearly 1,000 migrants got over or through the fence to Ceuta over a 3-day period in February, almost as many as during the whole of 2016. Many believe Morocco deliberately loosened its border controls to let them through because it was angry at a European Court of Justice ruling related to the politically sensitive territory of Western Sahara. Soon after the court ruling, the Moroccan government issued a statement suggesting that it might use the migration issue as retribution against the EU and Spain. Ramon Carrasco, a Spanish civil guard based in Melilla, has no doubts that this has indeed been the case.
When it comes to doing business with Spain, Morocco uses immigration as if it were a currency. Every time a fishing or agricultural accord is imminent, the pressure increases a lot, and a lot more migrants start arriving than normal.
It's lunchtime at the Immigrant Temporary Stay Center in Melilla. This is the place where immigrants are brought once they have managed to get into Melilla. They're brought here, they're given food, they're given clothes, and they stay here often for several months before they are then taken to mainland Spain. Alassane Barry is a 20-year-old who left his native Sierra Leone with the dream of reaching Europe. He got to Melilla 3 months ago. Are you optimistic about your future in Spain?
I would like to make that my future if I have the chance. I would like to be somebody in the future. Yeah, I would like to be more, you know, We'd like to be someone in the future who can benefit.
How did you get to Melilla? Did you go over the fence?
Through the fence.
Through or over?
Over.
Over?
Yeah, but it's not easy. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Mm. If I have the chance, I will tell my brother or my friends not to go there, because it's very difficult.
Did you try other times before?
Yeah, three times. Yep. Four times. That was my lucky deal.
Alassane knew nothing about the recent tensions between Morocco and the EU, which may have helped many sub-Saharans, like him, to reach Ceuta and Melilla. And although the borders around these two Spanish cities are usually tightly controlled, with the prospect of a better future on the other side, it looks like migrants are going to continue trying to get over or through them. Guy Hedgeco, DW, Melilla.
There are just a handful of medical centres in Africa that use needles and substitute drugs to help addicts, either to get off heroin or at least to use it in a clean and safe way. The only centre in West Africa is located in Dakar, Senegal. The hope is to reduce the rate of HIV and AIDS among drug addicts in the capital while helping them ditch illegal drugs. At the same time, it's just a start to address drug addiction in Senegal and across the region. Emmanuel Londe has more.
The doors to the Addiction Management Centre in Dakar, the first search centre in West Africa, opened in December 2014. The project was set up after a 2011 report found the rate of HIV in injecting drug users was 7 times higher than Senegal's national average. Dr. Ibrahim Ndiaye is a psychiatrist and addiction specialist at the centre.
In fact, the initial reason was HIV, but the objective of this centre is the overall management of addiction for all types of drugs, whether the person is infected with HIV or not. The main thing is that there is a drug consumption problem.
The centre's mission is to combine the fight against blood-transmitted diseases like HIV/AIDS or hepatitis B and C with the fight against drugs. It also aims to improve the mental health of its patients. One programme to help drug users is opioid substitution therapy. People dependent on illegal drugs like heroin can switch to methadone, a drug administered only by a doctor. By swapping heroin for methadone, they'll stop injecting, stop sharing needles, and stop spreading HIV. They'll also be reducing the demand for illicit drugs in the country. Andre has been an outpatient here since the beginning. He comes every day to take his methadone treatment instead of taking heroin. He started taking drugs at the age of 20, first cocaine, then heroin. Now 59, the wiry and elegant man remembers what it was like when he became addicted.
You can imagine in 1979 there weren't a lot of hard drugs here. I discovered them by going to some nightclubs that were here at the time, and I had friends that were a bit older. They were in France and would come back on holiday and bring it with them. So we got to try them. Thankfully, I finished school, but sadly, I ended up in France for my studies, where there was coke and heroin in abundance, and I kept putting it up my nose.
While living in France, André was a full-fledged heroin addict. He worked hard to make a living and support his habit, organising reggae concerts all over the south of France, running a nightclub and a clothing shop, until his wife sent him home in 1997. Back in Senegal, money was tight. 1 gram of heroin cost around 38 euros, and back then, André couldn't function without at least half a gram every day.
When I returned to Senegal, my life was no longer the same. There was no shop, there was no nightclub, no concerts. The income was no longer stable. So all the money I brought back, the music equipment, everything I had, went into heroin. I ended up with shower slippers to get around Dakar. I had 2 pairs of trousers and a tunic. It was very, very hard.
But since 2015, André's life is back on track. With his methadone treatment, he no longer spends his time looking for his next shot of heroin.
When I was told about the centre, I followed the programmes, the meetings, the workshops, and I realised that it was a door. It was an opportunity to seize because it would allow me to have at least one substance, even if it's an opiate. But that's a drug that's safe. I would stop spending my money, my time, and get my entourage, my family back. Yes, I feel much better, much better. Not all is rosy, but it's a good start.
Outpatients take methadone orally out of a small cup just bigger than a thimble. The greeny-blue mint-flavoured medication is kept in a special room under lock and key and distributed under surveillance. Of the 743 patients at the centre, 192 are heroin addicts who follow the substitution programme free of charge. Built by the French government and United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, the centre is subsidised by the Senegalese government as a public health measure. According to Pierre Lapac, the UN's regional representative, Senegal and West Africa in general is a transit point for drugs like heroin and cocaine, but it's also an area of high drug consumption.
Basically, all kind of drugs are used in Senegal, from historically, I would say, cannabis, but then after you have heroin. A few years ago, you had no drug injectors or heroin consumers in the country. Now we have around 1,500, 1,400 exactly. It's difficult to have those kind of data.
Addiction in Senegal is increasingly linked to recreational crack cocaine, a highly addictive product derived from cocaine. Lapac says its cheaper price means a larger number of people can afford it. Psychiatrist Ibrahima Ndiaye says in the past 2 years, the number of heroin users at the centre in Dakar has stabilised, but users of other drugs like cannabis and alcohol have increased.
It's your everyday man and woman. There is no partition, there is no sectorization. Here, we see all types of profiles. People come from everywhere. There is no class or area that is more or less disadvantaged than another.
According to Pierre Lapac, the new threat is methamphetamine. Around 100 kilos were destroyed last year by authorities fighting drug traffickers.
And you have methamphetamine and crystal methamphetamine, which is now more and more produced in the region, meaning not in Senegal, as far as we know, but in the region for certain. The first lab which had been detected was in Guinea-Conakry in 2009. And since then, all the labs which have been dismantled were in Lagos, in the southern part of Nigeria.
Whilst there is just one drug centre like this in Senegal and the whole of West Africa, it's an example to follow in the region, he says. Ideally, more centres should open across West Africa to offer support to the millions of drug users.
We should have some CEPIAD not only in Senegal, but in other countries in the region. The drug addiction is not only a Senegalese problem. An estimate, because it's very difficult to have exact figures on who are the drug addicts and how many drug addicts you have in a country. But our estimate is, yeah, in the region you have between 2 and 3 million of people who are drug consumers.
For Andre and hundreds of other drug addicts, the centre in Dakar has provided a chance to change their lives, but more efforts will be needed across the region to curb drug trafficking in West Africa. For DW, Emmanuel Landet in Dakar.
You're listening to DW's World in Progress, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. You can find more content at dw.com/worldinprogress and on our Facebook page, DW Global Society.
You're beautiful, that's for sure. You'll never, ever fade. You're lovely, but it's not for sure. I won't ever change, and though my love is great, and though my love is true, I'm like a bird, I only fly away. I don't know where my soul is, I don't know where my home is, and baby, all I need for you to know.
Coming up, meet a man who's probably the most dedicated fan of old Volkswagen cars in South Asia. But first, we're going to Miami in Florida, where gun violence is rampant. It's actually one of the most dangerous cities in the US. Many kids here grow up with the news of shootings and the reality of violence in their streets, and many also get drawn into violence themselves. But the Guitars Over Guns project is trying to offer teenagers an alternative. It's an after-school program that pairs at-risk adolescents with professional musicians. Many of these mentors have also grown up in a tough neighborhood, so they know what the kids are facing. And they encourage them to stay in school instead of dropping out, stay away from drugs, and express themselves, for instance, in music and art, instead of turning into a life of crime and violence. The program is proving so successful, it's now being exported to other American cities, as Maria Bacalapulo found out.
In southwest Miami-Dade,
it has been shooting since last night.
Sends four men to the hospital and prompts a pursuit and day-long search for suspects responsible for a drive-by shooting.
Gun violence in America is the worst of any developed country. Currently, the estimated number of gun deaths and violent injuries is close to 100,000 a year. And Miami ranks as one of the most dangerous cities in America. Drive-by shootings make regular headlines on the nightly news, and often the reports highlight the innocent people caught up in the crossfire.
Chase ended with a gun in his hand.
Fatal shootings with victims under the age of 18 has spiked, with an average of one child shot every 17 hours in Florida. The problem is endemic. Firearms come second to cancer and deaths among youths in Florida. In 2016, two children and 34 teenagers under the age of 19 were killed in Miami-Dade County shootings. One victim was 8 years old, another only six.
And so another day in Miami-Dade, another shooting.
These sobering statistics made Guitars Over Guns founder Chad Bernstein react. He began a music mentorship organization that pairs professional musicians with students in under-resourced neighborhoods. It aims to empower them, inspiring them to succeed, not only in the classroom, but in life, and specifically to reject the cycle of violent crime in their communities.
A lot of our mentors come from similar neighborhoods as our kids, and there's a relatability there that's really important.
The mentors can relate to what the kids are going through, says Chad. Started in 2008, they currently have 33 mentors, serving 608 students.
In all cases, our mentors and our students are connecting through music and the arts, and that affords us a universal language to create these relationships that ultimately are the vehicle for creating such impact and such change in the lives of our students.
Today, several middle schools get together to film a music video. Around 40 kids sing along and take turns to dance freestyle for the cameras. As the sun sets, they break up to play basketball or chat with their mentors. 21-year-old Sierra Shaw is a go-go rap mentor. She teaches kids to rap, minus the profanity.
We create a relationship with the students that they may not have at home, and when they come with Guitars Over Guns, it's easy for them to express themselves, to be themselves, and, you know, like, what's the problem at school? What are your grades looking like? How can I help you with your homework? You know, if some kids don't have it at home, we have it here. So the positive impact is that they know they have anyone to lean on whenever they're in trouble or if they just need a listening ear.
Chad Bernstein says his group has seen more than a 90% increase in academic performance and school attendance among the students who take part in Guitars Over Guns. The program keeps the kids off the streets and gives them an alternative to the vagrancy that leads to violence. Many of the mentors have their own stories of gun violence to share and set an example to the children to choose a better route in life. 21-year-old Sierra.
I do feel like guns is a big problem. I had one incident with my cousin. Her ex-boyfriend shot her, and she died on the scene. And, I mean, it really hit home because we never had anybody around my age die so young in our family. So we could prevent problems like this. We could make sure that students stay away from gun violence and stuff.
Many of the kids don't have very good home lives, so the mentors almost become parent figures to them. 15-year-old Danelle Pittman is enrolled in Guitars Over Guns and says it can help turn things around.
Basically just stopping violence after all, and try to get our young teens to join the program, because to feel this some type of way that there's a better way out of the violence, this has to stop. I'm pretty sure with the spreading our program in Dade County, I'm pretty sure that we can get there and stopping gun violence once and for all.
I don't want to earn, I just want to earn. I don't want to be in debt, I just want to learn.
Antonio Monte Shelton is a local rap star who's also involved in countering violence.
I just bought this auto-tune equipment. Can you hear me? Gun violence is a major problem here in Miami. My experiences with gun violence has been like growing up in the inner city. My mom had a two-bedroom apartment, one for her and then me and my four brothers. We shared a room. She would always hear gunshots every night, and she would tell us to get under the bed. We have to go under the bed and lay down and just don't come up because bullets are flying everywhere, and she didn't want us to get shot. And I was like, what, first grade, 5 years old through middle school. That was the type of lifestyle that was going on. In middle school, one of my good friends, Jeffrey, got killed. He got shot.
Monty has had radio hits here in Miami. He wants to convey the message that shooting is not a solution.
I just want to learn. After graduation, I go into bankruptcy. Tell me I should intern.
With restrictions on guns being sold to mentally ill being nullified by the Trump administration and American criminals' fetish with military assault weapons, the likelihood of a child getting caught in the crossfire can only increase. Guitars Over Guns, Chad Bernstein, explains how they are trying to give kids a place they can breathe.
It's really about creating a space where they can exist and be free of judgment and not have the same pressures that they feel during the day at school to fit into some, I need to be like every other student for fear of being bullied or ostracized in some way. And in creating that safe space, they then have a place where they feel like they can share what they're thinking about and what they're feeling. And for most of our students, they may not have that opportunity elsewhere.
While America is paralyzed by its political deadlock over gun control, Guitars Over Guns gives the youth other kinds of role models to find a better path in life, steering them away from violence. Chad has been receiving increasing support from the local government, and his team has started to expand the project to Chicago. And it looks like the educational outreach model is set to be picked up around the country. For DW, I'm Maria Bacalopolo in Miami.
And talking about creativity and talent, well, if you're looking for an incredibly gifted car mechanic, look no further than an exciting backyard in the northern Pakistani city of Rawalpindi. It's here that Arshad and his business partner Nazir turn old Volkswagen wrecks into gorgeous roadworthy cars. And the Beetles and other gems look like new. They are always on the lookout for old wrecks to restore and sell them to wealthy clients from all over the country, and they truly love the old cars. And Nazir's big dream now is a road trip with a classic VW van to Germany, the home of Volkswagen. Jürgen Webermann reports from the Volkswagen Haven in Rawalpindi, and Natalie Muller has this story.
In the midst of the chaos of the big city, away from the dusty main street, Nazir leads the way into a courtyard. It looks like a scrapyard here, home to about 20 old VW Beetles, nothing more than rusty wrecks.
Westridge, Rawalpindi, and here's the little Volkswagen Heaven.
Heaven, yeah.
Nazir briefly shakes hands with Arshad, a mechanic in a grey smock who sports a snow-white beard. Then, as Arshad points out an old red VW van, Nazir's jaw drops.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow. The last time I visited, it was all butchered, hacked, in a bad, bad shape. I don't know, if you were a Volkswagen person, this is nothing short of a miracle to be able to do all of this and to keep, because we needed a hatch, and that was not in a good shape. But to make that fit into a later model, this is a hatch out of a 74 model, and this is a 66. To make that fit is mind-blowing, honestly. Makes me very happy. I'm genuinely happy to see that thing because I wasn't even expecting that.
Nazir actually has tears in his eyes. He's so moved. Arshad is his hero.
Right now, I can safely say that there's no other bodywork guy of his caliber in Pakistan who can do what he does.
When Nazir and Arshad first met, Arshad only had a bag full of tools. That was 20 years ago. Wherever a car had been abandoned, Arshad would repair it, no matter the model. But Ashad was particularly skilled when it came to old Volkswagens. He uses old photographs as templates.
I had a good teacher. His name was Shakil. And Shakil worked at Volkswagen in Germany for 5 years, in the 1970s. That's why I know Volkswagens.
Ashad is a man of few words. The 50-year-old prefers his masterpieces to speak for themselves. It was Nazir who found the workspace and leased the courtyard in Rawalpindi. He also tracks down the old beat-up VWs.
Now there are no big pockets where you find a lot of them, unless you come here. But otherwise, I have my network of informers. They are normal. There is this a truck driver who delivers water to construction sites and far-off places. So he drives a water tanker. But then, you know, he has an eye for these abandoned Volkswagens. And if I strike a deal, then he gets his finder's fee, which is 10,000 rupees.
Nazir has built up a small, illustrious customer base. Diplomats, nostalgic Pakistanis, they've all heard of the VW Beetles from Rawalpindi. The Pakistani capital, Islamabad, is also just around the corner.
Ah, there's no shortage of them. I select my customers. I refer customers to whoever, wherever they want. There would be somebody who comes and says, oh, I would like to buy a Volkswagen for my daughter who's going to the university. Okay. And there's somebody who comes up with something. He always had that thing for that Volkswagen. You know, I'd like to restore this car. One look at it and I said, yeah, sure. Yes, I get paid for it. No question about it. But I want the owner to be passionate about it as well, as I am.
There aren't any VW repair shops in Pakistan, so whenever Nazir travels to Dubai, he picks up spare parts for Ashad and also for his own small fleet. Nazir now owns 10 old Volkswagens.
Why Beetle? Like I said, amazing simplicity, durability, memories. Very much. I've come a long way. It started when I was so little. You know, I could fit in behind the rear seat. And then that was the only car I could afford, which was in 1983.
At the moment, Ashad's busy with Nazir's latest treasure, the red 51-year-old VW van. It'll take him a few months to bring it back to its former glory. Next year, Nazir wants to get behind the wheel of the renewed VW and hit the road for a grand tour through Pakistan's wild southwest, Iran, Turkey, and finally Europe. His ultimate goal, Wolfsburg, the home of VW.
I do hope that this long journey all the way from Rawalpindi to Wolfsburg will truly happen. I couldn't imagine a better van to do this with than a classic VW bus. But for this edition of World in Progress, we've reached our destination for today. Make sure to join me again next week. If you'd like to listen to this or past episodes again in the meantime, just go to dw.com/worldinprogress or find us on SoundCloud or on iTunes. Thanks very much for tuning in. From all of us here in the studio in Bonn, Germany, Eliane Giarducci, Gerd Georgi and me, Anke Rasper, goodbye and take care. Said his body's too old for working. His body's too young and took like his mama ran off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school and that's what I did. He got a fast car. We go cruising and sustain ourselves. He still ain't got a job. Not working the market as a checkout girl. At all things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house.
cause I live in the suburb. You're a fast car. She fast enough, she can fly away. You're